All right, Charles, we're going to talk about IVF. But you being a doctor, I would like to first defer to you and ask you, what is it? Tell us how it works.
Well, IVF stands for in vitro fertilization. So that means the fertilization is done outside the body. And you extract from those who want to have children egg, sperm, depending on what the capability is of giving you that. Sometimes you might have to use donor eggs, donor sperm, whatever. And you do the fertilization process ex vivo, and then you create the early stage of maturation of an embryo, which is usually a 4 or 8 cell, a bunch of cells, just undifferentiated cells. And those are stored, and then you prepare the, the in you prepare.
You blushing?
Well, because I hate, I despise the use of birthing person.
Okay.
All right. I mean, if
Well, you
one
don't have to
thing,
say
if one thing of woke would go away, birthing person needs to go away. Okay. So you
Okay.
implant the embryo, and then from there, you support as needed the pregnancy, if it takes as a pregnancy. And the other thing that you do before, and this is cogent to what we're talking about, is that before you implant the embryo, you do extensive genetic testing for both single gene conditions, the traditional things like phenylketonuria, things like that are basically single gene coding deletions. But you also do what's called now polygenic
That's
sequencing.
fairly new,
Right.
polygenic screening.
Well, yeah, and it used to be super expensive and super time consuming, but now, because of technology advancing, it's done relatively quickly and with much less expense. And those are the kinds of things where you're able to look at some of the conditions that are multifactorial. So they're not deterministic based on one gene change.
So, IVF has come a long way since Louise Brown was born in 1978. She was the first so-called test tube baby, and she's still alive, I think. But we've come a long way since that, and now there's all sorts of conversation about, well, you can pick your kids, your gender for sure.
Right.
Or shall I say sex? And then you can
Well,
you
you can pick your phenotype.
yeah, there
Yeah.
you go. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, doctor.
Right.
And you can also pick intelligence level, perhaps athletic skills. You want an Olympic star? You want a concert pianist? I mean, it seems like a lot of those options are now on the table, correct? Or soon to be on the table.
To some degree. I mean, it's the again, when you're looking at things that require the activity of multiple genes in some sort of collaboration, all you're producing is a probabilistic score of likelihood. In other
Right.
words, yes, if you're missing, if you have a disease that's caused by the need to have two normal genes, and you don't have two normal genes, then it's 100% chance you're going to have the disease
Right.
if you're missing two norm one of the two normal genes or both.
And IVF can, quote, fix that.
IVF would let you know ahead of time that that's going to be the case. What you d then do is another question, which is it comes down to the question of would you use those embryos knowing that, let's
Right.
say, that the genetic, the simple genetics would say this is probably going to be a Downs
And
child.
in a previous, perhaps even more rational scientific era, I don't think those embryos would ever be considered viable, a viable child. But now you have what they like the case in Alabama, where the embryo was considered a child,
Well, that's
and
yes.
destroying an embryo outside the womb was considered an abortion.
Well,
That was changed.
the status of the embryos is a very controversial area, because they're also seen as property. They're property in divorce settlements. From state to state, how long you have to keep these embryos varies, if they're not used. of course the issue around, is this life, and therefore is destroying these embryos akin to abortion because you're right. destroying life? Yeah, there's a lot. That's the part of this which is problematic.
Yeah.
Also, because the status of the embryo itself determines what would be the value of knowing this information. If you're precluded from doing anything about it, what's the point? You know, but the other part of it is people are horrible at statistics as it is. Right. So
what percentage of people are horrible at statistics?
The vast majority of people are horrible at statistics.
Sorry, I had to throw that out there.
I mean, the vast majority of people are horrible at statistics. And so, again, it's one thing if you know for sure, because it's a simple Mendelian genetic type thing, disease, that this is going to happen or not happen. But when you're dealing with things where there's a contribution of multiple genes, and of course, there's also a contribution of something that we are only just beginning to understand, which is epigenetics, which is that there are activities within the DNA that are turned on and off by activity from other parts of the DNA that is not necessarily the part that's transcribed to create any sort of copy of a human being. You know, so these genes are turned on and off by environmental factors, which can be something as simple as stress. It could be the microplastics. It could be the mercury you suck in because you have a coal plant near you, which, by the way, exceeds any exposure you'll ever get from vaccines, for those of you out there, you know, who think
and that's about to get
autism.
Worse.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, but my point is, suppose you get a score that says there's an 80% chance that this kid will be over 6 foot.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a 20% chance that they won't be, right? So right. Are you going to sue people because they're not? Or are you, you know, well, are you going to destroy an embryo because it's not 100% chance they're going to be over 6 foot? I mean, because some of these things are trivial. Now, people who pursue IVF, tend to be mostly, in this country, white, upper socioeconomic class.
Right.
Even where there are people of color in the class with insurance, who could afford, based on their socioeconomic class, to do this, they tend not to do this.
Yeah. Because there's a cost to it.
Well, it's a huge cost, and there's also this, what you know, we've been talking about, which is, what do you do with this information? I mean, how would you feel as a person that you decide, I'm going to destroy this embryo because there's not enough of a chance that they're going to be over 6 foot? Now, the argument people make is, well, in this world, being taller is advantageous. Why should I bring a child into this world who's
short,
not as advantaged?
Like you, for example.
Well, all right, but that's the fact. I mean, the fact is, that's how people see this. Some people see this.
I mean, I'm saying that as a 6 foot one guy, five foot eight, seven?
The reality. But, you know, in the piece you sent me, I thought the other interesting thing was that you could make the argument that you don't need to do any of this at all. If your main concern is a less violent society with less schizophrenics, you know, less violent crime, and a higher level of education, you could do this much more simply without having to do polygenic sequencing. And that is, don't have male children. people don't want to hear that. But
society would be like our beehives, predominantly female.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, so,
and drones basically have one function and that's it.
And this is a rationalization for a kind of souped up 21st century eugenics.
I was just going to say this, it's hard to know exactly where this is going to go, but the trend line shows that even more and more details can be determined in the future, and that potentially you could basically be, you know, giving birth to the real life equivalent of, say, a $6 million man or woman, you know.
But
how is that really do we feel good about that morally? I mean, socially, does it make sense to allow that kind of manipulation of life?
Well, interestingly, it also raises the question, if you tend to make your gene pool more and more restricted to the expression of certain genes, you actually weaken the species.
Too.
Most species that are, the perfect example would be like cheetahs. They have a
cheetahs.
Cheetahs, yeah, you know.
You're not afraid of them?
No.
Okay.
I what I'm saying, though, is cheetahs, that cheetahs are very prone, they're very fragile as a species because they have a very limited number of genetic options. And if you start doing something like this where you're going to say, I don't want kids who are tall, you know, shorter than 6 foot, you're, by doing that, you're also going to choose for other characteristics being absent that you may not yet understand. Mm-hmm. And that is going to affect genetic evolutionary possibilities for the race as a whole, for the human race as a whole. And it's also going to make us much more fragile to things we don't necessarily know at this point, or much more susceptible to them.
So it seems like there is a role, given the increasing, I mean, what, there, how many millions of Americans were born through IVF last year? I want to say it was like 5 million. I think I remember seeing that statistic somewhere. It's a lot. You know, as more and more people opt to use IVF and opt to use the polygenic screening options that help you determine what qualities you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's that in the wrong hands. I mean, could you see the likes of a fascist dictator? You know, basically. I mean, there's history of this. You know, in Nazi Germany, it happened the other way. Get rid of all the undesirable genes. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But it could. You could also see a dictator, authoritarian. Well, let's make sure we breed only the appropriate genes. You know, I mean, why is that not a real risk? And how do we preemptively guard against that?
You can make all the laws you want, but I think that the availability of this is going to create just the problem that you're positing, which is that. We are going. It certainly has the potential to force, you know, reproduction away from large groups of people, you know, towards those who see themselves as the desirables.
You know? Which in our country tend to be white guys.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, that certainly is true in terms of IVF, because as I just said. It is used predominantly by non,
mm-hmm.
by people, not people of color in this country. But, you know, I think in terms of what would be advantageous to a dictator, a fascistic dictator, it would definitely be to actualize AI. Even this makes...
What do you mean actualize AI? Oh, you mean in...
Yeah, I mean, your army should simply be... You know, automatons.
Right, but do you see that working in conjunction with IVF somehow?
So much in terms of. I just think in terms of application of force, which is what dictatorships do, that a you know, non-deliberative in the sense AI can be made non-deliberative, is much more dangerous. Hmm. And it makes life a lot cheaper because you can just replace machine.
Again, to be clear, and that is a separate conversation, I guess. But to be clear, I mean, I think we would both agree that IVF is a wonderful opportunity for people who want to have kids and for one reason or another can't do it.
Yes.
But the problem is, at what point does it become abused? And I think we see the potential of that
The potential for abuse is certainly very high.
Yeah.
Now that you can do this kind of genetic sequencing.